the rainbow bridge of Asgard, where the booming heavens roar. You'll behold in breathless wonder the god of thunder, mighty Thor.
And welcome to the continuing adventures of Superhero Speak, episode 30. So, this is our Thor episode.
It is?
Yes. What do you think, Pete?
Sounds good.
So this one is me, your host, Dave.
And Ben. How you doing?
And Pete.
Don't be scared, Pete. It's Pete Wearily, we promise. It'll be painless. So just like we did with Iron Man 3, we've recorded a half hour of us talking about the movie, what we thought of Thor 1, and our hopes and dreams are for this one. And then immediately after that, we see the movie, we will record a half hour of us and our reaction to the movie. So listen to the whole thing.
And we apologize in advance if there are completely different people in the second half.
Maybe.
You guys are inviting me back?
Yes. Sorry, Pete.
We will have doppelgangers.
Oh, okay.
All right. And here we go.
So, I heard that this new Marvel movie coming out about some Asgardian dudes.
Yeah.
Yeah? Did you hear about that? Have you actually...
That's pretty interesting, actually.
Before we get into any of that, have you been looking at any of the news online?
Mm-hmm. Not today.
So... We all heard the news yesterday that Marvel is doing 4 new shows for Netflix plus a miniseries, and now they're doing another show on ABC. They haven't said what hero it is yet.
Interesting. I did not hear about this.
And if the Daredevil show does well on Netflix, that will also be a movie.
Nice.
Oh, that is good. I said they can... They can finally make a Daredevil movie.
Yes.
Yes.
they have failed to do so thus far.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, that Ben Affleck thing didn't exist.
What are you talking about?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But he was great in Phantoms.
Yeah.
He was the bomb in Phantoms.
That's true.
He was the bomb.
True story.
Yeah, so I thought all that was kind of exciting.
So what you're saying is Marvel is winning the universe.
Yes, Marvel is winning. All right, so do we want to... All right, so how do we want to do this? You want to do... That means Pete has to actually go see Thor 2.
Maybe.
No, I will. I mean, does it have to be today? You are seeing it today, Ben, right?
I am going to see it today. I'll be going at... I have tickets for a 4:20 showing.
I am probably not seeing it today. Hopefully tomorrow. So,
yeah, I was, if not this weekend, I was going to see it this week anyway.
By the way, just a little piece of information for you. I will be seeing it in 3D. Not because it's any better necessarily in 3D, but because as one of the incentives to drive people to see the 3D version, they're showing a special like 5-minute Captain America Winter Soldier trailer only in front of the 3D version.
Definitely have to do that then. It's just going to be me and the wifey. We're not taking the kids to see this, only because years old is. It's a little tricky when it comes to dark movies like this.
How old?
Five years.
Okay. I will say that both of my kids are coming, who are 7 and nearly 10.
Yeah, I was going to say 7 is good.
7 is good. My son did see the first Thor movie in the theater though, and. That was a couple of years ago, so maybe that makes me a bad parent. Who knows? Anyway.
Well, it does. Yeah, we'll agree on that.
I'm not saying I'm not a bad parent. I'm just saying, I'm not sure if that qualifies me there.
Okay.
No, I would say this is more of a, I know my kid personally very well.
I hope so.
And I know that dark movies don't sit well with him, so.
Yeah. No, I actually had... there was a bit of a chore the first when we went to go see the Avengers. My son, during that initial scene, the chase scene with the with Loki, he freaked out to the point that he wanted to leave the theater. And it took a decent amount of coaxing to get him to come back in. As a matter of fact, it took the realization that what we were watching was fake that that made him willing to come watch it again.
Okay, so do we want to do an official start and then talk about Thor?
Have you been recording this whole time?
He's always recording. I was going to make that caveat when we finally did record, but I forgot about it.
No, you should actually send a guy a message first. Come on.
My Skype just always records. So.
Oh, okay.
And I have two programs that are recording, too, so there's always a backup.
Right. Oh, I don't think there's anything we've said so far that can't be part of the episode, though. So I think
I'm good. Even this part, I hope, makes it to the episode. Cause...
Yes. So, Thor 2, A Dark World, where we get to see Thor and Loki hug it out.
That's right.
Have you seen the...
The fake poster?
Yeah, the fake poster.
Yeah,
that apparently actually got put in a movie theater in Shanghai.
Yes.
Very nice.
Where they're cuddling.
Yes.
They're brothers. So, they should cuddle.
He loves his brother.
Half brother. He's a doctor.
I want to say this about the only news I've actually read is how well it did in the box office. Opening day is estimated, $31.6 million.
Wow.
Nice.
It's pretty good for day one.
Not only that, it's really good for a movie this late in the year as well.
Yeah. Talking about early November. Yeah, we're not even into the thick of the holiday season yet.
Yeah. I mean, we're approaching the Thanksgiving, Christmas, holiday movie season. But it is, it's sort of the early cusp of it.
Right.
It is. Anyway, it was really good news. I like that Thor can even draw that big of a crowd. But I know it's Chris Hemsworth and Tom Hiddleston.
Right. But I have opted not to read too much of the press on it. I have noticed though that there seems to be, prior to most recently, like say a week ago after it had premiered, there was some critical reviews of it, and the general consensus I got is they loved Loki in it, were not a huge fan of Malekith the Accursed, which is Chris Eccleston's character in the movie.
Yep.
But I'm willing to give it a shot and see how they play it out.
Right. That should be interesting. I keep wondering with the whole Loki thing. It's like, all right, we had him in Thor as the villain. Are you guys still there?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Shoot, my headphones went quiet for a second. Sorry. Loki was in the first Thor movie as the main villain. Then he's the villain in the Avengers. And now we're doing, he's kind of the Hannibal character. For lack
it's
of
kind of funny that he's in that movie as the Hannibal with Anthony Hopkins.
Yes.
that's a good point. That's
but,
funny.
It's kind of like, if they do a trilogy with Thor, I think we've had enough Loki. Not that I don't...
Actually...
Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say that I think that Marvel is doing a lot of juggling here. Mm-hmm. And I think they're doing a good job. And that's what I'm expecting going into this movie, is that they're going to continue doing that wonderful job of being able to juggle an entire universe, but still make a movie compelling enough to go see for the individual characters. This is Thor's movie, right?
Yeah.
So it has to be Thor-centric.
Sure.
But they are still doing such a great job of juggling Loki into it. Loki's just one piece of it. But...
Right. And I got the impression that many of the other characters are going to be a little bit more heavily featured than they were in the first Thor. Some of the other Asgardian accessory characters. So, we'll see Sif developed a little bit more deeply. The Warriors 3 to some extent. So.
Yeah, that would be awesome if they could develop Thor's Thor's individual universe, not just he's, because, you know, they even make the joke, what Jane's friend says, oh, you're all still muscly and everything. You know, it's like they're, it's, you know, they're playing on the, they're selling into the eye candy world, but I really do like
my wife goes to these movies.
Exactly.
Yeah, no, and I definitely agree with those sentiments. I have high hopes for this one, that it'll be better than the first one. Now, I know a lot of people like the first one. I just kind of felt, compared to the other Marvel movies, it was a little weak. It was just, we need to get Thor onto the playing field for
before
Avengers.
Before we put Avengers out, right? Yeah.
Right. And that's how that
sort
movie
of how
felt.
It went in my head, too.
Yeah, it was like, they could have done a much stronger movie, I think, you know, but it was good.
I think it was the movie it had to be, though. Like, I think that I think it was a good introduction to the character by giving him that, because the whole, you know, the pathos of the story was, you know, he had this he wasn't necessarily young per se, but he acted young, he was impulsive, he was brash, and you wanted to have some sort of catharsis for this character. You wanted to have him earn, you know, his spot as being Thor, like becoming worthy. And I think that they did that well. And maybe, I don't know. I actually really enjoyed the first Thor movie. I thought it was well done. I didn't have any complaints about it, really.
I agree with Ben on this. Just for the idea that you have to, and when they're bringing in the idea of Thor, this is Marvel at its genius. You know, it's, they're bringing in a character that is, has a completely different story to the rest of the superhero kind of,
right,
the mythos that comes into the Avengers. And that's really their goal. Right. Their goal is, we're going to make an Avengers movie. Let's get all these characters out there and in people's minds.
Yeah, let's establish these characters.
So that's what they did with Thor. Thor, the first Thor was actually that. It was, I think, well done in this aspect of, we're introducing every single thing you need to know.
Right, before, background for this character.
Yeah, before you get into the actual, like, main stories.
Right.
And that's what I think this one's going to be. It's going to be a main story. It's going to be a very well-written story, I'm hoping.
Hopefully. And yeah, I agree that there's definitely, like, all of the movies are, and most of the heroes, these stories are sort of origin stories. Like, you got that with Captain America and Iron Man. Those were growth stories and origin stories of them coming into becoming what they are. With Thor, he already technically was what he was. So you had to have his origin story be something different. And I think that that's something they actually managed to do pretty well by having his catharsis be, rather than him becoming Thor, it was him, well, he's still becoming Thor, just in a different way.
Well,
he wasn't a superhero at first.
He just was an alien who is naturally super strong and lives forever.
Right.
I guess my issue, when I really think about it, is I didn't find the relationship between Thor and Jane Foster that believable. Like, it just didn't seem like he fell in love with her. You know what I'm saying?
Maybe not.
I don't know if that was just the chemistry between the two actors, if that was the way it was written. But it's like, think about it this way: he's a god, you know.
Yeah.
I know they're trying to avoid
for
that.
For lack of a better term.
Right. They're trying to avoid that in this universe. But you know, he's a god. He is the leader of this, one of the leaders of this world. He has all this power, and in the comics, he gives all of that up so he can be with Jane Foster on Earth, you know, at one point. And,
well, right.
And I don't get that feeling like Thor would give up all of this stuff so that he could stay on Earth with her, you know?
I don't know if he has to do that, though. I mean, I understand that is the canon of it, but I don't know if that's necessary. Like, I think that what I gathered from the first Thor is that while we did have Jane, you know, come... Jane Foster came to definitely have feelings for him. He was sort of single-minded in his focus, that he He just wanted to get his hammer back, essentially, and get back to Asgard. And that transformed over the course of the story. But I would think it might have felt a bit forced for him to fall head over heels for her in that storyline.
Well, I guess that's what I was hoping for going in, is that was going to be his focus. But then once he met her, he was going to say, you know what, maybe I'd rather just stay here with her, you know?
Well, that's what I think they're going to play into on this one. And the thing they have to worry about, and Disney and Marvel are both very conscious of this fact, is that Star Wars 2 shouldn't have been half the love story between Anakin and Padme, right? So don't do that with Thor. But I think they're going to pull some of those things in. He goes down to get her right away. I mean, I'm talking from the preview, you know? So I think they're going to play a little bit onto that relationship, and they're going to build it up so that they ask that question.
Right.
You know, what are you willing to give up for the thing you believe in?
Right.
Right? So, that's a tagline, by the way. I didn't pull that out of my head. Yeah.
But,
So I believe they're going to go into this.
Yeah. And I think that it's one of those things that he... So if you think about the plot line of the first one, you know, he left, when he left Earth to go back to Asgard to deal with Loki, it was, you know, at that point, there was always a possibility for him to come back until the events of, you know, throwing down with Loki and breaking the Bifrost. And that, while it may not have come across necessarily in the emotional depiction of that story, I'm sure there might have been, and I guess what they're expecting the audience to believe is that, you know, once he was sort of forced to not be able to go back, he might have realized the feelings he had for Jane.
Right.
And I mean, you're also saying that, like, that movie, Thor, the first Thor, to me, was a little rushed. And I just mean as to get as much story in as possible. Mm-hmm. Like, he died, you know, it. And when I say rushed, I mean, like, you know, he gets sent to Earth. He meets a human that immediately puts him on the path to figuring out who he actually is. And, you know, so they're getting through this whole storyline really, really quickly.
Yeah.
With two villains in it. That movie has two villains in it. Loki being one and the Frost Giant. King of the Frost Giants being the other.
Right.
Yeah.
So, it did feel a little rushed. And up until that end point where the Bifrost is destroyed, it does. So what I'm saying is they probably didn't have enough time. You know?
Fair enough.
Right, right. No, and that's true. And I think probably, Marvel knows going into this movie, it's more important to tell a Thor story at this point. Like,
oh yeah,
you know, we got him onto the playing field. He was in Avengers. Everyone loved, you know, him and Hulk in the Avengers. So now we need to tell more about who Thor really is. You know.
Well, right, right, yeah. What's what's his purpose?
Yeah.
All right.
So yeah, I guess we will hopefully see that.
Yes, and
I'm looking forward to it. That's for sure.
And for those who don't know, I have heard there's actually two after scene credits.
Oh, good. Nice.
There's one, like, I think during the credits. And I think the one at the very end, from what I've heard, is a teaser for Guardians of the Galaxy. And I'm not sure what the other one is.
Yeah. It'll be Loki and Thor and Jane Foster eating shawarma.
This stuff is really good.
Or to set up for Ant-Man? No.
I doubt that.
Yeah.
That's a little too early, though.
Well, it's a little disconnected as well. Like, I don't see where that would fit.
Yeah.
Have you, I know Ben listens to The Nerdist. Do you listen to The Nerdist, Pete?
Yes.
Did you hear the latest with the... I can't think of his name. The guy who's head of Marvel Studios.
Kevin Feige.
Yeah, Feige.
Don't spoil it.
No, I haven't heard that one either. I was actually listening to the Clark Gregg one yesterday and partially today.
Yeah.
Which is awesome.
You guys just suck.
Probably one of my favorite episodes to date of The Nerdist.
Okay. Yeah, so then you heard what I was saying about what he was saying about the character of Agent Coulson. Like, he's still on the journey of discovering who the guy is.
Right. Well, and I think that, and that's one of the things I was going to bring up, is one of the things he talks about in that is Marvel's approach to these things and their willingness to listen to the fandom and listen to the people and steer things in a direction that they know we are interested in. Like, and that was something they did with, and also listen to the people in within the movies. Like, you know, Coulson started out as didn't even have the name. He was just Agent and had maybe like three lines in that first movie he was in. Which was, the first one he was in was Iron Man 2, right?
Yes.
So yeah, and but you know, working and he got that because John Favreau was his neighbor.
The first one he was at the end of Iron Man. Or was that he, that was
no, it was just Nick Fury was in the end credit scene. I didn't think that he showed up in that. Maybe
Nick Fury, that's right.
Yeah. So anyway, so yeah, it was a bit part. It wasn't necessarily meant to be anything bigger than that, but then it turned into a 3-movie deal, and because they saw the potential, they saw that could be fleshed out, and obviously it did. And then he was somewhat bittersweet about the death of his character in the Avengers, you know, even though Kevin Feige called him personally and said, look, it's, you know, you are the pathos of this team. You are the reason that they come together, you know. So it's you know, it's a good thing. But you know, afterward there was this viral groundswell of people, you know, with like saying, you know, Coulson lives and all these different things, and they listened and they responded to it by creating, coming up with an explanation for how he survives, and creating Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. So. In that
which
same
makes
way.
Them a little bit more awesome in my mind.
Exactly. That's my point. Yeah. So I think, you know, with this as well, that they listen to their fans and they're going to keep doing that and keep making things that they know that we're going to enjoy.
Which is why I keep coming back to watch this stuff. Because even if they haven't, that's my biggest fear, is they're just going to mess something up.
Right.
And I have seen enough now that they're not going to do it for at least a little bit, because they do listen. They do pay attention.
Yeah.
So they're not going to mess things up.
Right.
Well, cool. I mean, it also comes back to just the basic rule that you can't make everyone happy. You know,
oh, for sure.
True.
As well as they do, there's still going to be something in a movie that, you know, someone's not going to be happy with. And, you know.
They have a huge franchise. Because some people won't watch Captain America because of this, or they won't watch Thor because of this, but they'll watch Iron Man.
Right.
You know, so they have enough of a breadth.
Yeah, they're going to have people that stick to a niche.
That's right.
Right.
So,
which is, you know, it's good.
I'm sure there are people who watch the show and don't watch anything else. So. You know that.
Yeah, that's
I don't know
true.
Who those people are, but and that's just weird to me.
Just to say that I'm right and Ben was wrong. Coulson was in Iron Man.
Okay.
He is in the movie.
Okay.
He tries to contact or tries to get a meeting with.
Oh my God.
Stark.
That's right.
And Potts, Pepper Potts, actually, like, you know, takes his car. They do. They have a couple interactions.
Okay. I can picture that now.
That's right. It's at the fireman's charity thing.
Yep.
That's right. I forgot about that.
And that's just because I was right.
I'll admit that you're right. I'm not too big a man to admit that you're right on that one. That's fine.
You owe Pete lunch.
Okay.
There you go.
Someday.
Someday. Yeah. Well, he has to save up for it.
Yes.
Yeah, no problem.
But yeah, and I would say that, you know, if the worst thing about this particular movie is potentially the character, the bad guy, who I'm going to go out on a limb and presume he doesn't survive the movie. It's not really much of a loss. Like, you know, I think they can recover from it and move on. And I actually, you know, again, I wasn't really reading any of the articles about it to avoid getting too many details. Right. But one of the headlines I saw talking about, I guess from some group that did see like an early premiere of it on Thursday night, the headline was that Thor 2 shows how a movie can still be joyful. And that gives me definitely hope that this will be a good one.
Yeah.
I do kind of wonder going in, though, obviously from the clips and the previews we've all seen, like, you know, there's this big battle that goes on. It looks like it spills on into Earth, and, you know, Thor's trying to protect Jane Foster and all that stuff's going on. So then becomes, you know, with the Marvel Cinematic Universe, it used to be, you know, before this existed, that would happen in a movie and we'd be done. You know, we'd go on to the next movie and no one really cared about it. But now that spills out and has a ripple effect.
Yeah.
On, I mean, we already, for those who don't know, they've already said there will be a tie-in to Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. The episode in 2 weeks, I think.
But the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. show, not the...
Yeah.
Not the movie.
Right. And also that, you know, just S.H.I.E.L.D. itself, it's like, I mean, they talked about, you know, this organization has to protect the Earth from outside threats. So now is Thor going to be considered part of the threat?
Right.
You know, I mean, that's something that's been played around in the comic books and in the cartoons, so
yeah.
It's an idea they can use in the movies. So I'm kind of curious what the aftermath is going to be.
Right. I think, and we have seen some scenes where obviously things are connected and things are happening on Earth as a result of what's going on in this movie. I suspect we'll have a Man of Steel-like ending to this, where Thor does end up saving the day. But there is, but there's probably some degree of collateral damage.
No,
as a result. Maybe not the billions of dollars of damage that happened at the end of Man of Steel.
And the millions of lives lost.
Right, but something more manageable. I'm sure we'll have some, and maybe whatever the looming threat is, because we saw in those trailers those. Looming giant floating things, whatever the heck they are, showing up on Earth, and which I'm sure we'll find out more about. There may be a bit of a Independence Day vibe with those, that they have some destination and that Thor has to defeat whatever, but within some time frame before they destroy something important or intersect with each other or whatever they have to do.
Right. All right. So it's been we're almost to a half hour.
Yeah.
So
I think we've beaten this dead horse pretty well.
So
yeah, I'm ready to just go right now, and I'm just gonna go to watch it. I don't care
where. I was gonna say. So final thoughts. Pete's ready to go run out and see it now. Ben is going to go out and see it shortly.
Yeah.
And so, okay, well, on that note, everyone, stick around. Right after this, you'll hear part two, which will be our reaction to the movie after we see it. So, stay tuned. Woo-hoo. All right, so... I guess we can talk about Thor since we want that to go up this week anyway.
We do.
Even though we did the first half with Pete.
So I don't think consistency is important on these things.
No?
It's not like we're not even consistent during an entire episode.
Yeah, I know. We have Pete chopping in.
I don't think this would matter, comparatively speaking.
Where is your professionalism?
We're geeks.
It's not about professionalism. I'm just saying that people will not notice because it's not going to be any worse than anything else that we produce.
Well, they will miss me because without me, you know, there's no really, really bad jokes. And so they would have nothing to sit there and go, oh, God, did he just say that?
Oh, Dave makes his share of them as well.
Yes. All right. So, all right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the second half of our Thor special. Let this be your warning. There will be spoilers coming up. And so if you haven't seen the movie, stop the podcast here. Go see the movie and come back. If you haven't already. Yes, well, obviously, if you haven't seen the movie, is what I said.
I meant if they hadn't stopped the podcast already.
All right, we're just going to stop right here. No more. And this, and for this half, it's me, Ben, and John. Say hello,
hey.
John.
Hey, guys.
I actually saw a movie.
Pete Lee could not join us today. He had family obligations, and I don't even know if he's seen the movie yet or not. So
he did have some interesting thoughts coming in, which you probably already heard listening to the rest of this episode. So, Thor 2, The Dark World. I don't know if that fit.
No, Dark World, I don't know.
So, I have to say, personally, I think that I really enjoyed this movie. I thought it was better than the first Thor movie. They came into it, interestingly, I think there was... I noticed there's sort of an interesting antithesis to the beginning of this movie versus the first Thor movie. At the beginning of the first one, we had a, you know, they introduced Thor as this, you know, headstrong character who couldn't wait to be king. And, you know, with his father being king, but being sort of hesitant to, you know, hand over the throne. You know, whereas in this one, you know, Odin almost can't wait to give up the throne to Thor, and yet Thor is hesitant to take it.
Right.
So I thought that was an interesting 180 to things, which is, you know, it's just illustrating the growth that has happened over the time.
Odin just wants to go and play golf.
Yeah.
he's done.
Yeah, no, I can't blame him. I will say that one of the things I found interesting with this, so they've already sort of established that these guys are not gods per se, they're just aliens from a different realm, from a different part of the galaxy. They did sort of hint at in this movie that they, you know, are generally humanoid, obviously, and they are much more durable than your average, you know, Earth human, but they do have a lifespan that seems to be somewhere around 5,000 years.
Mm-hmm. Yes, unless your father takes your powers away because you've been bad.
Right. Which it was never really 100% clear how that was accomplished per se.
Yeah, I definitely agree this was better than the first one. And yes, there's the antithesis to the first movie. I think one of the things it suffers from in the beginning of the movie, though, is what a lot of these... a lot of times these kinds of movies suffer from when you have a, not only a grand scale in the movie, you have a grand scale with the villain and what they're trying to do. So they tell this intricate backstory in the first, you know, 10 minutes of the movie, yeah, which kind of hurt the pacing a little bit, you know, for the overall movie, I thought. It was good. It was well done. But
yeah, it did feel a little bit like a non sequitur to the story. It felt like, because it was narrated, that backstory piece was narrated, and that made it feel a little bit out of place,
mm-hmm,
compared to the rest of it, but it almost had to be narrated because there wasn't really enough dialogue to carry it. And half the dialogue that there was, you know, Malekith and the other dark elf speaking whatever made up language they shoved in there.
Right.
Just so we had some reading to do.
You know, they just give them marbles and say, here, try to speak around these.
Yeah, and honestly, I'm not the kind of person who really balks at subtitles, per se. Not that I go seeking them out, but I've enjoyed my share of foreign films. But for this type of movie, I don't know if it really was the best choice on their part, because I think that, you know, because I went to see it with my whole family, with my kids, and, you know, my son doesn't really read well yet. My daughter might have read some of the subtitles, but probably doesn't read them that quickly to really keep up with everything that's going on. You know, the point is the kids are part of the audience, the younger kids who aren't necessarily going to be into reading subtitles that much are part of this target audience here, and they need to... I would have thought it would make more sense to give them some sort of different accent or something and just have them speak English. But
Yeah, we talked about this a little bit the other day, is the problem with when you give characters a made-up language, and or even a foreign language, but a made-up language in this case, and you have them speak it... it takes you out of the movie right away.
Yeah.
You know, and we didn't have them speaking English at all before this. It was, here's the introduction to the Dark Elves, and they're speaking their Elvish language, and now you have to read subtitles, and you have no idea about the, you know, emotional state or the background of these characters at this point. Just read this and figure it out. And I think a movie you can compare the Dark World to in some ways as the Lord of the Rings movies.
Yeah, I was going to mention that, because they also did have some of the Elvish subtitles at points in that movie, in those set of movies.
Right.
And that bothered me a little bit there too, because again, it's unnecessary. Like, I don't really see how that helps, other than to, you know, the fact that Tolkien did go to the trouble of writing these elaborate languages for these races and included that stuff so that we know that there are these languages exist to be and can be spoken. It doesn't mean that you have to give everyone give a small group of people that nerdgasm of being able to hear it in the big screen. You know, we would be just as happy hearing them speak English and maybe do something to make us know that they were really speaking Elvish or whatever. I don't know. It just seemed unnecessary, especially in this, because in most of the cases where it was being spoken, it was not being spoken around other people. They didn't want to understand what they were saying.
Right. You right. Know? Exactly. It's, they were in their ship with their other elven kind.
Exactly.
So there was no
need. In which case, why did it matter? It served no purpose.
Right.
That stuff really bother you that much?
Actually, it didn't bother me that much. I just thought it was an odd choice, is really what it came down to. And it was an odd choice knowing the potential target audience for this movie. That said, though, my kids were there watching the movie, and not once did either of them ask for any clarification on what these guys are saying. So either they didn't care enough, or there was enough context to carry it through that they didn't need to know more than what they could gather or infer on their own.
Well, actually, the reason I brought it up was one of the criticisms around this movie was everyone really liked Loki, everyone loves Loki, and people weren't happy with Malekith and the way he was presented in the movie. And I kind of feel that's one of the reasons they didn't like him, is because they weren't drawn in emotionally because they had to read subtitles, you know, so they had to think about him more than just be, you know, feel the moment.
Well, also, it was your generic bad guy. I'm going to remake the entire universe in my own image. And I think, you know, the Dr. Christopher...
feels flat.
The doctor... Yeah, what?
Oh. I said that sort of depiction feels flat.
Yeah, and Dr. Christopher had so much makeup on, you couldn't recognize him, so...
Yeah. and I will say that... And I agree with you, John, that whenever a character is subtitled... You know, when you have to read that subtext, you sort of lose, especially if you're trying to pay attention to both what they're saying and what they're saying at the same time. You have to pay attention auditorily to get the context, the tone of what they're saying, but also read the subtitles to get the context of what they're saying. So it's difficult to pair those together. It takes a little bit more mental energy to do so. So I think it's a detractor to... I think you're right. I think that the Elvish language did detract from his characterization a bit, the depth of his character.
It wasn't the language, though. It was the fact that introduced to him by
character too. I wouldn't say it was all of it. I just think it was part of it.
Yeah, I mean, I would have liked to have known what, I mean, did like an Asgard, you know, get with his sister or something, or his mom, and that's why he wants to remake the entire universe. I mean, what did somebody eat his lunch out of the lunchroom?
Well,
what
made him? Well, someone wasn't. The entire universe. Somebody wasn't paying attention to the movie.
No, yeah, because they were from a time before the light came into the universe, so they wanted to revert it back to the way that it was.
Yeah, but that's not. Well, I don't think that's the original. I mean, that's definitely not Norse mythology, and that's. Really not. I don't think that's in Marvel mythology either. Dark matter. Elves.
Half these characters aren't matter. In Norse mythology.
Well, they've been generally kind of, you know, nice to that and true to
they,
it, but
they take liberties.
But
we actually talked a bit about that in the last half. But you know, it's I don't care about the liberties they take as far as the Norse mythology. I'm okay with that. I don't expect them to follow it closely. I do think they do need to have the villain have a motivation that makes sense. And I guess his motivation made some level of sense, but it just did seem a little, you know, blinderish, you know, narrow, you know, he had tunnel vision towards a singular goal, and that doesn't feel realistic. And, you know, it just didn't, it's felt, and I guess the, his willingness to sacrifice, you know, lives to get there.
Like most of the rest of his race, just so that one.
Well, yeah, again, he was willing to sacrifice his own people. So what difference does it make to sacrifice other, you know, species and races and whatnot? So it was, there was no, what do I want to say? There was no dichotomy motivation. There was no, well, I'm just saying that there was nothing wrong with the characterization and the fact that there was no dichotomy, there was no hypocrisy, but at the same time, it was just, it was flat.
Right, well, I mean, from my understanding, he's a very one-dimensional villain from the comic books as well.
Yeah.
He just is an evil guy doing evil, basically. You know,
he's evil.
Right, exactly. Right. Like, he's bad for the sake of being bad in the comics, so...
Right.
So you take a one-dimensional villain and you don't add anything to him, really, other than, yes, he has a motivation, but, you know, you've been fighting this war for millennium and haven't been winning, so you would think you would change your tactic at one point or another.
You know, so far it doesn't sound like we like this movie very much the way we're talking about it.
No, it doesn't. So...
I really did like this movie a lot.
And let me get into one of the things I really liked about. We talked about in the first half, one of my issues with the Thor movies to this point has been I didn't like how they depicted the relationship with him and Jane Foster in the first one.
Right.
And they definitely did a much better job of depicting their relationship in this one, and the fact that you get the feeling, you know, at the end that he'd rather just be on Earth with her than rule Asgard at that point. You know, I mean, yes, he says that he doesn't want to rule even with her by his side. But, you know, you feel that it's much more deeper. It's just he wants to be with her and that's it. He doesn't want to worry about ruling.
Right. He doesn't want that role.
Right.
Because he's afraid it'll change who he is to something else, and he likes what the person he is now. Right. But yeah, I do, and yes, I thought that relationship was well done. I enjoyed the one thing that I thought, so the one thing we've talked about a number of times in these different types of movies is the importance of humor, which they've, you know, which obviously Man of Steel was not humorous. Iron Man 3 was, maybe a little too much in some cases. In this movie, it's a tough line to skirt, because Thor is not necessarily a funny character. I mean, he was in the Avengers, but I wouldn't have expected him to be funny in that same way in this movie, and he wasn't. But they did manage to keep a good amount of humor in the movie through other characters, and that I appreciated a lot. Between Darcy's character and things going on with her. And other accessory characters, they really managed to have a solid, you know, enjoyable amounts of humor scattered throughout the whole movie, without making Thor seem pratfallish at all himself.
Well, let's be honest. The humor that Thor brought to the Avengers was between him and Hulk, and
There was some of it. There was more than that. Like, I thought one of the funnier lines in that related to Thor was, you know, when Thor was, you know, defending, you know, talking about when he first came on the Helicarrier, and they're talking about Loki, and this is my brother, and he's like, he killed over, you know, 200 people. He's like, he's adopted. So you know, they sort of took that opportunity to soften it with a little bit of humor there.
Right.
So you know, and that's something Joss Whedon just does well. This was not his movie, obviously, but right. they still managed to keep, you know, sufficient humor throughout the thing. Although I did find it funny when they're walking through that tunnel, and Thor was like, why are there so many shoes here?
Yeah, but a lot of the humor in this one comes from Loki, who, you know, I think that was one of the really good things in this movie, was Tom Hiddleston was able to bring humor to that character, you know. And of course, it's a, you know, he's a dark character, and he's still a very dark character in this movie. But the whole scene when they're escaping the trying to break out of Asgard, and they're mm-hmm. walking down the aisle, and he keeps changing into different people.
Yeah.
You know, just like, you know, it's funny because my wife, I will admit, she dozed off during the movie. And just for, you know, for a little bit, and woke up with that scene. And so afterwards, she was like, how did that fit in with the rest of the movie? And then I explained, you know, Loki can change his appearance and, mm-hmm. and whatnot. She's like, oh, okay. And then she's like, I just liked seeing Chris Evans.
Yeah. Well, that was great because it was for them to find that, use that excuse to have Chris Evans show up, you know, for this brief little bit in the movie. But he's basically playing Loki playing himself, and that was pretty humorous.
Yes. John, you've gotten quiet.
Oh, I'm
thinking. Fell into a database.
Yeah.
No.
I liked it. I mean, I know I liked, I think there was enough humor there. In fact, I think this is one of the few movies that you could go full on Mystery Science Theater 3000 on and not have a problem coming with lines, which is what happened with me and the friend that I went with. I think we annoyed the people in front of us, but yeah,
there was
no
one in front of us. It was a pretty empty. I was surprised, actually, at how few people were in the theater when we went to see it.
Yeah, we went to see a matinee at 2:20, which, of course, you know, 2:20 and 2:45, we finally got through the previews. So 25 minutes of previews is, even if that one of the previews was Captain America beating the crap out of a bunch of people in an elevator.
Yeah, that was worth it.
Yeah, I know. If they'd only changed that elevator music, he might have a little less rage, but... but anyway, so yeah, there was maybe 15 people in the theater. I went to the 3D version, and yeah. You know, again, matinee on a Saturday. So
yeah, we saw mid afternoon, like maybe 4:00, 4:20 on a Saturday, and yeah, there was probably about 10 to 15 people in the theater. It was pretty empty.
Well, it's made according to Box Office Mojo, at this point, which is Sunday in its first full week of release, it's made $479 million so far worldwide. So, you know, they made the money back on it, so we'll get a Thor 3.
So basically you're saying more than the six of us. There was more than the six tickets bought between us.
Yes.
A few more, at least.
At least a few more. You know,
well, at least they've covered the CGI of his.
Expensive.
Yeah, at least they've covered the CGI of his abs.
Yes.
Abs. That takes a lot of money.
Oh, that was the other scene when he's bathing himself off in the fountain.
Yeah.
My wife went, I'm like, you know.
See, my wife enjoys him in the movie, but she enjoys Tom Hiddleston just as much.
You know, now that I think about it, there were more teenage girls in that theater than there were geek guys, so...
Yeah.
Gee, I wonder what the target audience of this was.
But, I have to say, though, one of the small throwaway scenes that I really, really enjoyed was when towards the end, when they're battling in Greenwich or whatever, and specifically Darcy and Ian, the intern, were running around trying to just avoid capture or being caught in the fray. And when Ian picks up that floating car and slams it down on top of a bunch of guys.
Right.
That was just a great scene. Especially with the teleported kiss right after.
Right, yes. That was, you know, and that was another good area for the humor in this movie was the intern's intern.
Yes, yes.
Yes, so...
What about the poor hammer trying to catch back up to Thor after going through all of those
riffs?
Oh, that
was
riffs.
Pretty funny with all the... the hammer kept trying to find his way, and yet he kept bouncing across the universe.
Oh, wait, no. Talk about throwaway scenes when they come into Jane's apartment and she hangs up her coat and he hangs up his hammer.
Yeah. Now, was I the only one who thought, okay, you know, considering how heavy the hammer is supposed to be when he's not holding it, do you think that's going to rip the hooks right off the wall, drop through the floor, and hit the ground somewhere?
But it's a mystical thing. Well,
yeah.
And that it's advanced science. So it's not. Literally heavy. But,
All right. See, you just brought something up. And being that this is a geek show.
Goodness.
I mean, come on. They take so much time in the first movie to show that no one can pull that hammer out of that giant pit in the ground. No one can touch it or move it.
Right.
Right. And then he easily just hangs it on there. Now, you can argue that, oh, well, because he placed it there, that's why it stayed there. But to me, then that's magic. That's not science.
Well,
and
any
advanced
magic,
enough science can be indistinguishable from magic.
Was that Asimov or was that? I forget
what the original source for that was, but it was quoted in the last Thor movie, you know, to sort of be the catch-all for these types of things. But yeah, it's clearly you can't give a lot of credence to the quote-unquote weight of the hammer because it doesn't have a set weight per se. It's variable. It's a variable density material because, you know, obviously he can pick it up without any difficulty. Not only can he pick it up, he can throw it a great, great distance, probably farther than you could throw other things.
Right.
And it can fly through the air. It can fly him through the air. So it's not necessarily heavy or light per se.
Because it's magic. It's a mystical hammer.
It's imbued with some sort of quantum mechanical abilities.
I just think it's so weird that they've gone out of their way to say that they're not gods and it's not magic, it's science in both movies. It's like,
yeah,
you don't have to beat us over the head with it.
I don't think they're beating us over the head with it. I did enjoy the Natalie Portman scene with the whole, like, you know, quantum whatever drive thing. I can't even remember what she said now. Yesterday, I would have remembered when I was not having a caffeine headache.
Right, right. When she said it was a quantum drive, and they're like, "Oh, it's this
quantum field generator."
Quantum field generator.
Yeah.
And they're like,
"Soul engine or whatever they called it."
And she goes, "Does it do this, 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 and this?" Yeah, quantum field generator.
And the nurses look at her like, "What the hell?"
Right.
Tomato, tomato.
Yeah.
Let's call the whole thing off.
So we've spent 27 minutes talking about this, and we really haven't talked that much about Loki, except for that one scene. But he really made this movie. Like, he was the star of this movie, I think.
Yeah, which I will say, to me, it was great, and I enjoyed it, but it also hurt the fact that it's like, you know, the other guy, Chris Hemsworth. It's like... Mm-hmm. Yeah, you look like Thor. You're a big, strong guy. But if you kind of feel like he does dark and brooding, and that's about it.
Yeah.
You know, which again, works for Thor, but there's not a lot of...
There's not a lot of range, is what you're saying.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. There's not a range. There's not a lot of depth in that character. They put all the depth into Loki, and it's like...
Well, I don't think they put all the depth into Loki. Loki is just... That's just what Loki is.
Yeah.
Like, and I think really it's not so much him as it is the actor who plays him. Tom Hiddleston plays that role so masterfully that it's just he's going to steal whatever scenes he's in, no matter how many lines he has. And you know, Chris Hemsworth is Thor. He plays that part well. But you put these two characters together, no matter how you know, no matter what they're doing, Loki is going to be a more interesting character every time.
True.
That's right, kids. So just remember, if you want to be more interesting, be a bad guy.
I'm not even saying because of that. He will definitely be the bad guy some of the time. But it's just, he's just a more interesting character, period. Well, Thor is a fairly simple character.
The villains are always the more interesting characters. You look at any actor, and they'll tell you that, you know, they enjoy playing the villains because they enjoy the complexity and the funness of being the villain.
Yeah.
And who has a little dog?
Not me.
That would be me.
Okay.
Is it Shecky?
No. It's just a little ankle biter. But, what about, we could go on and on and on about how, you know, Loki is great and how he's awesome and how all kids should emulate him. And, that'd probably be bad.
We'll talk about it more when they make the Loki movie.
Yeah, you know that's coming. I mean, come on. I mean, he's, you saw the ending.
Yeah.
But what about Odin's wife dying? What about, I mean.
Yeah, that is kind of a big thing. That took me by surprise that she would actually end up getting killed in the storyline.
My problem is it didn't take me by surprise because it's such a trope. Oh, we have a tertiary character here. Let's kill him to make sure everybody knows that this stuff is getting real now. You didn't have to kill her. It didn't advance the plot. She didn't gain anything by it, really. I mean,
yeah.
And you know, all you've done now is make Odin really sad.
Right.
You know,
speaking of Odin, I agree. I don't think she needed to die. You're right. They could have, and especially if she could have pulled that trick with Jane Foster being a hologram, why couldn't she have also been?
Exactly.
But anyway, the end scene. So what do we project the state is for Odin at that point? Because I didn't necessarily gather that he's dead per se. I don't know if what they were trying to project for that when Loki was turned out to be the one sitting on the throne there. Do you think it was just taking advantage of Odin temporarily not being at the throne?
No.
That Loki dispatched of him somehow?
Well go ahead.
All right. From past, you know, storylines, if I understand correctly, Odin is attached to Yggdrasil, and which is where he gets most of his power. And so Loki couldn't have killed him. So he's probably got him holed up somewhere, draining him, which has been a past storyline for Loki trying to take the crown. So,
right.
You know, that's probably, they might go with that. Who knows? They might come up with something other weird, but that's what I think.
Well, I mean, if we just go by the movie mythology that they're setting up, for the Marvel movie universe, in the first movie, he couldn't take over Asgard unless Odin was in his Odin sleep because Odin was too powerful for Loki to take over. So,
right.
So it's like, well, then, obviously,
he sang him a lullaby, right?
Well, I don't know. I don't know. Could he force him into his Odin sleep? We don't know. We just know that we know he was the guard that showed up and said that Loki was dead.
Yeah.
And then the next thing we know is, Thor is talking to his father at the end of the movie, but then his father turns out to be Loki. So we know that Odin went off with Loki. What happened to him? That's what was left up in the air.
What I'd like to know is what happened to Thor's ability to sense that he was using his glamours again. Because, I mean, the first two times, like, okay, Loki, that's enough. That's fine. Very funny. Okay, stop with the glamour. And now he didn't see anything wrong with, you know, or Odin. Odin didn't see anything wrong with the guy, the soldier that came back from the dark world. I mean,
well. Again, Thor is not necessarily the brightest bulb in the bunch. And so I think when he saw through it before, it's because he knew he was approaching Loki. He knew that that's you know, what he was walking into or up against. You know, by the end of the movie, he wouldn't have suspected that because he would have taken at face value that his brother died on the battlefield, and wouldn't have suspected that somehow that was a ruse as well that he walked away from.
True, but no, but again, they specifically showed him in the prison and him saying to Loki, okay, enough of the illusion. So he knew Loki was throwing the illusion there.
Right, but I think that's different. That's what I'm saying, is that Thor was walking up to Loki's cell. He knows what Loki's capable of, and he can know full well that Loki would not be reacting in that position if he had knowing what he knew, because that was after the death of their mother.
Right.
You know, he knows how close they were. He would know that Loki would not just sit there and grandstand. You know, he would be torn apart by it. So it's not so much of being able to see through his glamours as knowing his brother.
All right, I'll give you that.
I'll go with Thor just isn't the brightest
bulb on.
There's that too.
Yeah.
Side character note. The Warriors 3. Did anyone happen to notice that they recast one of them?
I wasn't paying that close of attention. Which one?
Fandral, the blonde one.
Right.
It was a completely different actor in this movie than it was in the first movie.
Oh, mean the Dread Pirate Roberts?
Basically.
Well, it was Chuck, the guy who played Chuck.
It was Chuck this time. It wasn't the first time, though.
Oh, okay. Who was it the first time?
I don't know. Some other dude. Some lesser known actor.
So why did they have Chuck?
Why would you not include Chuck if you could?
He was played by Josh Dallas in the first movie.
Yeah.
Interesting.
And Chuck, I'm sorry, but even towards the end of that series, you still don't see him as being a swashbuckler. You know?
I don't know. I have a soft spot for Chuck. And I wanted to see more of him, honestly. More of that character. If they were going to go and recast it, at least make his character bigger than it was in the first movie. And they really didn't make it that much bigger. It was pretty much as sizable as it was in the first movie.
Yeah, I'm sure it was, you know, I haven't read anything about the recasting. But I'm sure it was just kind of a scheduling conflict or something. I can't imagine. Maybe. I can't imagine it was done because, you know, they wanted a bigger actor in that role. Because, again, it was only in, you know, a handful of scenes. You know, he's a very tertiary character. He's not.
Maybe they did it for a different reason. Maybe they plan on trying to see if they can spin a Warriors 3 movie out of this. And so they wanted to set that stage.
So they just call him Porthos and get it over with then?
or the guy who played him in the original movie asked for more money, and they went, nah.
Yeah.
Who are you again?
remember what happened to Rhodey?
Yep, I remember.
Yeah. Well, then again, that guy who played Rhodey the first time might be cast as this guy the next time around. I hear he's all, you know, he's available, so.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, you know why David Nolan is in it, though? He's in Once Upon a Time. That's why.
Hmm. Well, that explains everything. No. Just because you're, you know.
Well, it's Disney.
But, okay, so as long as you're in a Disney show,
they own everything. So they said, "You, you're busy."
Yeah, I did like, though. Speaking back of the Warriors 3, the one thing that I did enjoy with it is that they gave at least one of them a little bit more depth of backstory by explaining that he came from one of the other realms. Hogan, I believe, was one of those, and clearly it was the somewhat out of place member of the group a little bit by being Asian in Asgard. Seemed a little slightly bizarre, but they explained that by, you know, because they were, you know, settling things on that one other realm world, and then at the end, you know, Thor basically said, "Stay home, you know, and keep things under control here." So
right now, here was something else too. Sif.
Yes.
Like, they kind of hinted at her liking Thor in the movie, but like it didn't go anywhere.
Well, I think that was on purpose. I think that they hinted that she liked him, but that it was unrequited. That was sort of where it was going to go. It wasn't going to go anywhere further than that. And it was one of those sort of things where everyone expected that they would have settled down together and, you know, started having little Asgardians. And, you know, she would have become the new queen, but he was thinking of other things.
I just felt it was odd to dangle that possible plot point in front of us, but then go, nah, not going to do anything with it.
Yeah.
I just wonder if there was something on the cutting room floor.
Well, we don't know.
There's time. 100 years from now, they can hook up when Jane Foster's long dead.
Well, this is true.
Well, yeah. I mean, considering what they mentioned in the movie, that Asgardians live 5,000 years and that, you know, the lives of normal mortals are a flash in the pan. So that could she could very easily say, yeah, you know, when he's finished with his pet, you know, and he's had his fun for the next 20 years, which will be a blink of the eye for somebody who lives for 5,000, then, you know.
When he's done with his pet.
Well, I mean, you know. But then, you know.
Is that how you see the rest of us, John?
Yes, because I'm so long-lived myself. But, yeah, no, they could do something with it in the next film. So, there is going to be a Thor 3, right? They're going to have all of these are going to be trilogies.
I don't know if there's anything been announced, per se, but I would imagine if they felt they could continue the franchise, they will.
They're running out of universe-destroying artifacts.
Sure. Well, I actually got the impression from Kevin Feige that they're not really aiming for trilogies for any of these things. They're aiming for series, for franchising these things as long as they sensibly can go. You know, basically recreating the comic book world in the theaters, in the theatrical world. So, not to say that they're necessarily going to be rushing to try to do a Thor 3. They'll fit it in where it fits. You know, I think we'll probably see Thor in Avengers 2 before we see him in anything else.
Yeah, I'm sure as long as they can write good stories, the movies are doing successful, and the actors and the directors are all willing to keep going, yeah, they'll keep doing it. But right, I'm not sure. I got the same impression. Like, they're not saying, yes, this is a trilogy, and we've written these three scripts, and we have to do whatever we can to make sure it happens. It's more like, let's write good stories and hope people go and see them, and then we'll keep doing it as long as we can.
Right.
Well, they have something long-term going because of the, you know, the now mandatory, let's sit through the credits and wait for the little, you know, teaser at the end.
Yeah.
Right.
Although, and I have to say, along those lines, the end credit scene, I love that scene. Like, I mean, I don't need the sappy, you know, he comes back and kisses her thing necessarily, although I thought that was fine. I love the whatever that beast was running around trying to catch birds in that lot.
And as we all know, Tuesday, which will be, this will go up the day after Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., there's supposed to be a tie-in to the movie, and I'm just hoping beyond hope that that creature shows up.
Yes.
I'd be willing to take, I wouldn't take that bet. I'm pretty sure that's probably got to be it.
I got the impression from the trailer it was something else, like, or at least what they're dealing with directly is something else. There's some sort of staff that seemed to have gotten left behind that supercharges people.
That's a cop out.
And that's fine. Yeah, that's fine. But as long as they're investigating that staff, you have that creature charge them or something.
Yeah, that could be interesting. But yeah, I would love to see that creature show up in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. I'm doubtful, though, that it's going to happen.
Too bad you'll be in Boston.
Yeah, well, it's not like I'm never going to watch the show. I just won't be there to corroborate one way or the other.
All right, we're way over half hour now, guys. So,
final thoughts?
Final thoughts. I will give it... I'm not going to say that this was my absolute favorite Marvel movie, because there have been a lot of really good Marvel movies. I will give it 7.5 out of 10 capes, though. It was definitely better than the first one. And, yeah, I hope that they keep going with Thor.
Well, as for me, I think Thor, the dark thing that keeps the plot going, was a really good movie. And I read one review on HuffPost. The guy, and I completely agree with the guy. The first half of the movie was kind of like, oh, wow, I need more explanation, really? Oh, good, subtitles, too. Oh, that's awesome. And then the second half, they remembered, hey, this is a superhero movie. Let's have lots of punching and fighting and a lot of property damage. And it worked. So, yeah, it really is worth seeing. It really is.
Though, to be fair, there was less property damage in this than there was in Man of Steel.
Yes.
Oh, yeah,
and if you notice in that scene, that last scene with Odin / Loki, all the columns seemed magically repaired.
Yeah, I noticed that too.
But the throne was not. So
you see, they had all the little robots come out after all the columns got destroyed. Right. After they backed the ship back out and cleaned the place up.
But, well, yeah, that's what you get with a technologically advanced CGI pipe organ that you live in.
Yes, I liked the pipe organ, too. Oh, no, did you notice how much that looked like the Palace of Ming from Flash Gordon, the movie from the 80s?
I don't remember that movie well enough to compare, unfortunately.
It looked so much like the Palace of Ming. I'm telling you, this movie, you could do MST3K all throughout. You could not get enough comments in. But yeah. Anyway, so yes, I liked it. Go see it.
Do you have a cape rating?
Oh, sure. I'll give this like an 8.5.
So I definitely did enjoy it a lot. One of the things that I found amusing is there was the scene where Thor finally takes down Malekith. And there's a decent amount of footage that happens after that. My son was clapping from that point through to the end of the movie. Just sitting there clapping away.
Is that because he knew it was going to be over soon? Or?
No, he just was... it was the happy ending he was waiting for. And he was thrilled with it. And I just found that hilarious. But no, I thought it was a really good movie. Like I said, I love the humor in it. I love the twists and turns that, you know, with especially with Loki and you know, the illusions that were cast leading you one way when it was actually something else. I would give it an 8. I'll give it a solid 8. I think it's better than Man of Steel, but I still enjoyed Iron Man 3 a little bit more.
Better than Man of Steel leaves a lot of wiggle room there.
It does. Well, I rated Man of Steel decently high, so I'm saying in my book, that's where it falls between.
All right.
So we're not going to talk about the other end credit scene. We're just not.
We're not going to talk about the setup for Guardians of the Galaxy? What? Huh?
I have no idea what setup you're talking about Guardians of the Galaxy about. No idea what you're talking about.
Yes, everyone. There are two kicker scenes at the end of the movie. Make sure you stay for both.
Definitely stay for the latter one. The first one, I understand what they're doing with it. It just felt like such a non sequitur. It just did not seem to fit with the movie at all. That's my only thought on that.
Yes, I agree. It didn't really fit. There was no explanation of why they did what they did. And other than, hey, this guy's going to be the villain in Guardians of the Galaxy. We'll hand him something now. So you guys know who he is when it comes out next summer.
We bequeath you the MacGuffin.
I do not think it means what you think it means.
Hey, John.
It's going to mean whatever I want it to mean at this point.
It seems that way.
John.
Yes, what?
Is that a new cape you're wearing? Don't let it get caught in the door. All right, everyone. Jesus. Have a good week.
Oh, God. Thanks.
Hey, everyone. You just listened to an episode of Superhero Speak. This is Dave. You can reach me at dave@superheroespeak.com. Also, if you're listening to this through the website, did you know you can go to iTunes and subscribe to it? So check us out there.
And this is Ben from Superhero Speak, which you can reach at ben@superheroespeak.com. And as you know, you could also follow us on our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/superheroespeak.
This is John, and you can reach me at john@superheroespeak.com. And if you want, there's our Twitter account, @superheroespeak.
All right. Thanks, and check us out at those spots.